New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
You are listening to Dove Valley Deep Divers with Eric Trickle
and Lance Sanderson.
Ball comes out of the hands of Newton. It's on the ground, picked up by T.J. Ward at the four-yard line. Vaughn Miller did it again.
On Overtime Media.
All right, welcome in everyone to another episode of the Dove Valley Deep Divers. I'm your host, Kenneth Booker, and here with me today is our senior draft analyst, our extremely knowledgeable Eric Trickle. How are you doing today, Eric? How are you feeling after that win?
I'm feeling good. I mean, I was dealing with a sickness. I'm still dealing with it. Did a test. Turns out it's, you know, the vid-19 that we've, you know, that I've been dealing with. So I'm still got a little bit of stuffiness, but I'm feeling better. And that win, it was a nice win, especially after what we saw Sunday. I mentioned last week I was worried about going into Sunday because teams do bad on the Sunday prior to Thursday night games. And Well, we got a bad game followed by a pretty good game, but it's nice. I said, you know, a couple weeks ago, coming into these four games, we needed to go 3-1. Well, we're sitting at 2-1 right now with Carolina coming up for that final game. There's a good chance we can go 4-1, putting us in a good position for the rest of the season.
Yeah, that was an exciting game to watch yesterday. It was exciting just because, like, everything that led up to it with Sean Payton returning back to the Big Easy in New Orleans, which I still haven't gone to, so I would love to go there. And then there was Spencer Rattler against Knicks, where some people wanted us to pass on Knicks and maybe get a Rattler later in the draft and maybe solidify our offensive line or defensive line a little more with that 12th pick. But it was nice to see the defense play well again. They didn't play the best against San Diego or again Los Angeles Chargers, but they played really well. It was nice to see Cody Barton whiff on an interception, only to redeem himself with that. Was it a strip sack or interception? I know he did.
It was considered an interception, I believe.
Okay, but yeah, it was nice to see them come out on a road win on a Thursday. Scoring points, not making it to where it's like a snooze fest on top of that, which a lot of the Thursday night football games can be. So I'm excited to see how they can roll this into not this weekend, but the following weekend and continue on to Carolina and hopefully not let up.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, that's the thing is we just got to stay consistent. It was nice to see the run game going, even though, you know, the Saints, they start off the season strong, allowing like 140 yards or something like that in the first two games, but over the last four games prior to this Broncos game, they were averaging 196 rushing yards allowed. The Broncos took full advantage of that, got their run game going, which granted with how beat up the Saints defense is, with their issues against the run, with their tackling issues, it's still good to see, because having a game like that, especially for Javonte Williams, can be such a confidence builder. It can be a confidence builder for the offensive line, and they need it going forward. And Javonte Williams, he had arguably the best game of his career, third highest rushing yard total in his career. First time ever he had two rushing touchdowns, and only the second time ever he had two total touchdowns. The first one coming in 2021 against Detroit, where he had one rushing and one receiving. So you need those confidence moments, and this was one of them. And you can, and for every aspect of this team, the running game got going. That builds confidence for, you know, Williams in the offensive line. The defense did well without Patrick Surtain. They did a great job against Patrick Surtain, which is good for their confidence. Hopefully he's back for their next game, though. So it's a lot that can, there's just so much for here that can build off confidence, which is so needed after the, you know, the short week and the disaster that essentially we had on Sunday against the Chargers.
Definitely. It was a man, what a game. Are you excited for how do you think they're going to hold up coming into next week with Carolina? Do you think they continue to ride high off this? Lucky, it's, I guess it's like a bigger gap, a bigger window,
a mini bye week.
But we can't. This, I always bring this up about teams that you should beat.
Yeah.
And we have to continue to be that aggressive like that. And before we start our show, let's just see, say hi to a couple people in the crowd or in the chat. You got Mike S with the Alabama. Say what's up, Eric, Kenneth, Scott, Dylan, and Broncos Country. Scott and Dylan are in with us today, but they're definitely, maybe they're watching. I don't know. Hopefully they are. But what's up, Mike? It's good to see you in here. And your Alabama Crimson Tide are killing it this year. Let's see how far they can go with their new coach. Then we have, sorry about that. It's further down. Okay. We got Michael Ronquillo coming over here on Facebook. Good evening, Eric, Kenneth, and the Dove Valley Deep Divers. Got reaction. Go Bo Broncos. Yeah, definitely. What's up, Michael? It's good to see you. Always have you in here, and it's not a show without Michael. So thank you for coming in today. We got a couple super chats, actually, from Casey Nickel. This Knicks has to hit those wide open receivers. However, some of those were some bad drops, too. What are some what's the trade market? Or what's the trade we make, assuming the playoffs are in the discussion? That's definitely a good question. What do you think, Eric?
I would be calling Cleveland Browns about David Njoku.
That would be
the first call. That would be the first call I'm making. I know there's a lot of talk about Kyle Pitts from Atlanta, but David Njoku is a capable blocker, a really good athlete, a great receiving threat. He can be that true all-around tight end that the Broncos need, and he's been a really good tight end in the NFL for years to come. They need a playmaker on offense. And Njoku, he still, I believe he has 2 more years after this year on his contract. I might be mistaken on that.
Okay.
He is the guy I would call because that offense is going down. They're stuck with Deshaun Watson. And I would be seeing if I can get David Njoku and be willing to give up almost anything to get him. Obviously, I wouldn't be doing a first or second round pick, but if it required a third, depending on what else, I would consider it. The Broncos need someone like that in their tight end room.
Yeah, that would be awesome, especially if they implemented them. Because a lot of times you'll see them bring in some outside guys, especially tight ends, and they don't really implement them as much in the offense. Maybe like later on, they'll have a couple of plays here and there. And it reminds me of our last, high name tight end that we brought in was Vernon Davis. Mm-hmm. He did make some plays here and there. He was serviceable, but Owen Daniels actually, it kind of made Owen Daniels step his game up. Which I don't know, maybe that's what David Njoku does as well. Like that would be like the consolation prize. If he doesn't work out, maybe a Nicholas or Lucas Kroll will step up.
Maybe he can help, you know, take that moment, that mentor role and kind of help Lucas Kroll or even Greg Dulcich develop more as a receiver. And even as a blocker, because David Njoku, when he was coming out of college, a lot of people were very concerned about his blocking ability. They did not think that he would really develop as a blocker, and he'd be limited as a slot tight end, receiving tight end, and it developed. So maybe he can get word through to Greg Dulcich. Would I hold my breath on that? Not at all.
Yeah.
But it raises that opportunity for it of, hey, I've been in your shoes. Here's what I did. I'm passing it along to you, and just see if it does something.
Yeah, those passes were pretty rough to see. There was like one of them was to Kroll, was short. I guess Franklin was another level behind him that was wide open for like a walk in. But I don't know how their progression was going in that actual play. And then you had another one. Was it Trotman? I'm not sure. It was like on the 5-yard line on the right hand side where he, I don't know if their bodies were kind of like leaning one way and leaning the other, and it kind of just threw off how he threw it. But it was one of those ones where you, if you're watching on TV and you really don't factor in that stuff, it looks like a pass that anybody can make.
Yeah.
And it was like missed by a few yards, and you could see it on the tight end's face. He was not happy about it. So he's got to clean up some of that stuff. He's got to clean up that footwork. He definitely
and
it seems weird. It's like, it seems like he's getting in the footwork, like in the right proper footwork, but right when he's about to release it, he leaves his feet.
Yeah, there is a, when you go back and watch all the games, there's definitely a timing issue. He hits that back foot, that back step of his drop, which a lot of what Sean Payton does, it's timing. It is what made Drew Brees so effective. It's timing. Mm-hmm. You hit that back foot, you want the ball out, and he just holds on to it a little bit more. And part of that is the defenses, and he's having issues figuring out NFL caliber defenses, especially with how disguised things are now. He's having issues with that. That's understandable. He's a rookie coming from, you know, or out of Oregon, where, you know, defense is optional, right? Playing in that conference. So it's a, not surprised there's some hiccups there, but it is surprising at how much worse his footwork has gotten from Oregon, because while it was a concern coming out of college, it wasn't this bad. And what it kind of seems like to me, and I was kind of telling, I mentioned this to you before we went live, mm-hmm. is it seems like Davis Webb and Sean Payton are trying to tear that footwork down completely and rebuild it from scratch, when all it needed was just cleaned up a little bit. Now, I don't know how accurate that assessment is. I don't know if that's what they're doing, but certain aspects to his footwork, it's just like completely regressed to like me trying to go out there and, you know, do this quarterback footwork that's needed. And it's such an issue, and it leads to this. And on that play where he missed Lucas Kroll, the issue is, it's like he had Lucas Kroll underneath, but he had a receiver over the top of him too. And it's like, He wanted the receiver, but at the same time wanted the tight end, because he kind of laid it in there in between the two mm-hmm. instead of just hitting one of them. And it's because right when he goes to make the throw, he kind of hops up into this weird stance, turns his body fully to it, and is throwing from a square chest towards the receiver instead of turning to a square chest as he's making that throw, pushing off that back foot, which does lead directly to placement issues. And it has been an issue all season long, and it's got to be something. I said it before, this has to be something Sean Payton and Davis Webb focus on. And now it's a mini bye week after the Thursday night game. Now is a great time to really focus on getting that improved and getting that corrected.
Definitely. It's because it's definitely noticeable. There's like the small amounts of the inaccuracy, like of just like a little bit further, a little bit, I don't know, just like little tiny tweaks, whatever, to it. Because you have to be perfect in the NFL with your throws. He's definitely getting better, but yeah, it's still in there. It's great that we're still winning. He's still, it doesn't matter with his running, because he's always done good with his running. He was second in the team, I think, behind Javonte with rushing yards again. Kid's got some wheels. I did see him throw a shoulder into one of the plays to a defender, which I wasn't very happy with, because especially with his throwing shoulder, it might have, until you separate your shoulder or get some kind of shoulder injury. But most of the time he's pretty safe with it. He'll slide, he'll get down, he'll get out of there. So we'll continue to watch his progression, of course, because he's the quarterback and he's our most important player. But it's nice to see him progressing with and bringing his old teammate along with him, with Troy Franklin, mm-hmm. leading the team with 50, with a 5 receptions for 50 yards.
On like 6 yeah. Five of six for 50 yards with a long of 30.
Yeah. And he seems hyped. He's super hyped up every time he catches the ball. Yeah, I'm excited to see him get better.
Still a very limited route tree from Troy Franklin, but he's making a bigger impact earlier than I thought. I thought that he would basically be a healthy scratch for most of the season just because of his issues as a route runner. But it's nice to see Sean Payton finding ways to incorporate what he can do into the offense that needs it. It just happens to be coming at the expense of Marvin Mims, who right now is playing himself off the roster, if we're going to be clear.
I did see him get Sean Payton using him in a lot of creative motions and work Franklin off of that as well, too, where Franklin leaked out to the opposite side of the field. But I don't know. I think they're trying now. That was like the first time I actually seen them use him, where I actually saw him prior to the play starting, like, just getting the team off balance and stuff like that. Cause he had somewhere he like ran behind the quarterback.
Yeah.
It was kind of weird. It was kind of like a backyard. Like one of those ones you tell your friend, you're like, yeah, go up here, turn left, or go. I don't know. Anyway, but it was really cool to see him get involved a little bit. But hopefully him and Mims can be more at least five targets a game kind of people. So with a running back, we had Javonte Williams do really well last night, but I know it's kind of a blip. Like his career lead high 40 yards was like 88 yards.
Third highest in his career for like 86 or 88 yards. Yeah.
Found the end zone twice, which is amazing. But there's also big young running backs coming out that will be a little more cost control, but like the kid out of Boise State, have you been watching him?
Yes.
So he says,
yeah,
BK talks about him here. Say, so what do you think about Austin Gentry? I really want this kid, or I really want this kid on the Broncos so bad. Sean has spent a first round pick on a back before Ingram in the past. The value of the running back have gone down lately, but he thinks it's back. So what do you think about the Boise State back in the first round for the Broncos?
I think it's possible. I think they definitely want to add a playmaker on offense early in this draft. This does look to be a pretty strong draft for running back, so maybe they'll decide to wait a little bit. But from people I talk with, there is a lot already of dots being connected for him to go from Boise State Broncos to Denver Broncos. Obviously, a lot can change between now and then.
Yeah.
We don't know where Denver's going to pick, but connections are already being made between the two.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Because the thing I like about him, I haven't really watched him as too much. I was hearing a lot of analysis on him. And his thing was he was breaking like 10 tackles. Like he was breaking so many tackles on the way to his big runs. It wasn't like they were just humongous holes, turning on the burners and he was gone. Like he was earning those runs, every single yard of those runs. So I'm going to have to dig deeper into him, but what was it, 1,300 yards like in four games or five? It was something crazy. It's
absolutely ridiculous production from him.
Some stuff you only see in high schools.
Yeah.
I've seen 500 yard games in high school. Extremely rare, but I've seen him in high school. I heard about him. But to do this in college is insane.
Yeah.
It is Mountain West. So I don't know if that has any, might have a little factor into it, but it's still, regardless, there's still 300 pound people that are trying to tackle.
He is 99 yards away from tying his rushing total last year. He's at 1,248 last year, he had 1,347 on almost 100 less runs, 126 rushes this year to 220. And one thing with running backs that I always look at is the mileage on the tires. Currently sitting at 502 carries, adding in 66 rushing yards, so 568 total touches from scrimmage. That is right in the range where you have such a high success rate with running backs in the NFL.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, wow. Yeah, it's, I'm excited. I would love to see him on the roster. It would spell the end of Javonte, of course.
Yeah,
but
Well, Javonte is also a, final year of his contract. He's a free agent after this year. And so far, there hasn't been any indication of them wanting to re-sign him. There hasn't been any talks about it. Unlike with a couple other guys, which we'll get to here in a second. But Eric Flint comes in with some stars on Facebook. No comment with the first one, but a comment here.
Okay.
Wondering if Nick's put it in the right spot with the under overthrow, but the tight end cut before he was supposed to. No, it was just a bad throw off of a bad base. The tight end cut right when they were supposed to, judging from the design of the play, because it's a play that the Broncos have run before, and it's a pretty simple one. It's a pretty basic one for Sean Payton, I guess would be the better way to put it. Just the base just led to him just overthrowing the tight end, just not by a whole lot either. Like he was still able to get up and get somewhat his fingertips on it, but you improve that base, I think that throw is made right there on target to the tight end for a huge gain.
Yeah, those layered passes are pretty—they're pretty important in the NFL. They're really—they're extremely hard to throw. But if you can get those down, you can really, really demoralize the defense. It's like they're almost unguardable.
Yeah.
And then we had Casey Nickel coming back in talking about Njoku brings that threat effect that teams have to worry about. Whereas when they look at our tight ends, they just see a joke essentially. Yes. It seems like we're like a tight ends. And nobody's like, usually backup tight ends are really good at one thing. You know, they're like really good at pass catching, or they're really good at blocking. It's mostly really good at blocking. But our guys are just like mediocre at everything, it seems like.
Yeah, even Adam Trautman. Adam Trautman's supposed to be the best blocker on the team, but he is so inconsistent. Lucas Kroll and Greg Dulcich, they're the receiving tight ends, but Lucas Kroll, he can be a decent enough receiving threat, but he is more of that safety outlet type tight end receiver. And Greg Dulcich, obviously, he's just never developed. So, yeah, I completely agree here. The tight end room for Denver is a joke. I've viewed it as a joke for months now. And they got to do somebody. Bring in Kyle Pitts. Hey, if you want a receiver, if you want a joker type guy and you don't want blocking from him, go Kyle Pitts. If you want a guy who can kind of be that joker and be some block, bring some good blocking, David Njoku. And that's just kind of where I'm at with that.
Okay. Well, on the other side of the ball, you have Michael Ronquillo talking about Nick Benito. Did he get another sack last night?
Yeah.
He did. Five sacks in five games.
Five straight games.
I know I had missed one. I saw one of them where he came pretty close to. It was a late night game, and it was right before I had to go to work. But, man, this guy is just plays insane. Like, Nick, I was watching Nick and Scott earlier, and they were talking about how he's essentially a speed rusher around the edge. And even though you know it's coming, he still beats you.
Yeah, his get-off is insane. He's got one of the fastest get-off time averages in the NFL. It's like either right under 0.7th of a second or right at 0.7th of a second.
That's got to be so much fun to be that much faster than the we're trying to block you.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Because he's repeatedly throughout the game, you'll see him find his way into the backfield. Maybe need that extra half second, whatever the quarterback gets the ball out or steps up in the nick of time. But Nick Benito has definitely been playing pretty lights out this year. Him and Jonathan Cooper, John Franklin Myers, smashed Spencer Rattler. That was pretty painful. Looking sack. Zach Allen is just day in and day out is just overperforming, but he just, I don't know. That guy just comes to play every single week. So
to talk about going back to Nick Benito real quick, talking about his get off against the Saints, he was getting off an average of 0.6 of a second off the snap.
What's an average on that?
About 7.9 or 0.79, 0.80. That seems to be about the average for edge rushers.
Okay. And then we saw that Browning came back yesterday. Was he playing inside?
No, I think he was substituting in on the edge with Nick Benito. And yeah, he didn't do anything that made me change my thinking that Denver should look to trade him.
Okay.
He had a really bad game. Granted, it was his first game back off of injured reserve. Hopefully we can see a little bit more better out of him over the next couple games. But I think Nick Benito and Jonah Ellis have done a good enough job that makes me comfortable with moving Baron Browning, who is also on a final year of his contract, as is Jonathan Cooper. I think Jonathan Cooper has earned an extension. Baron Browning, I think you let walk at this point, so you may as well try to trade him, see what you can get for him. Turning to these other guys, there is some issues with Nick Benito against the run, but it hasn't been absolute killer against the run for him, which is a step up from previous years where he was a complete liability against the run.
I know you don't want to go back and forth with a player, but would you consider moving Browning back inside?
No. I think at this point it's pretty settled. He is better off the edge than he is off ball. I just think the way he sees the game is different. And he talked about this, I think last year, after a post-game interview, somebody asked him about it, or it might have been preseason. At some point last year, I'm pretty sure, he was asked about moving from off-ball to edge, and he said things are simpler. You don't have a lot going on around you. It's very upfront what you're being asked to do, and it just makes it easier to read and react to the play, which is where he feels like he does best at, which is understandable. A lot of guys would do better with that. So I wouldn't consider moving him off-ball or moving him back. Plus, I think Justin Cernod, he's been playing exceptionally good football, like exceptionally well. Cody Barton's been pretty solid. He had his best game again on the season against the Saints last night. Had some rough moments outside of that game And then Quan Alexander, he played a really good game in limited usage last night as well. So I'm comfortable with where the inside linebacker room is, the off-ball linebackers, to not okay. want to move Baron Browning as well.
It looks like Joe Brewer agrees with you on the no on Browning, because that means you're going to move on with Cooper from Cooper. So,
yeah, you only got room for one of them.
Yeah, and one plays all the time. Yeah, there's a few people like BK as well. He'd rather have Cooper than Browning as well.
Which, hey, my offseason stuff, I was expecting more out of Browning than we got, and it was all contingent on him staying healthy. Hasn't been able to. I was not expecting Jonathan Cooper to take a step forward as a pass rusher as he has. It's been a huge step that you just don't see often. And yeah, I mean, I was all about keeping Baron Browning over Jonathan Cooper. Now it's they need to get Jonathan Cooper signed sooner rather than later.
What do you think about so they wanted to – Sean Payton had talked about bringing in Estime. He wanted to get a look at him. He had a couple plays. He did fumble the ball again. Mm-hmm. Javonte took advantage of that by doing the complete opposite and just running all over the place and scored touchdowns. So I don't know. I've seen him in the preseason fumble it. I've seen him now. What do you think Payton does? I know, and he's going to roll him out there again. But if he fumbles again, is he just rotate to Blake Watson or?
I mean, Blake Watson was waived. So
he's waived. Okay.
Yeah, he was waived because to activate Damari Mathis. They're sitting at 51 out of 53, and they activated McGlinchey, Browning, and Mathis all throughout. So they had to move one, and Browning was.
It was nice to see Mathis back.
But Tyler Beatty, I think, has one more game on injured reserve. And then when he comes back, if he's good, whenever he's back, he may miss the rest of the season with the injury he had, or it may just be one more game, the minimum that he has to be minimum left that he has to be on. I think that Audric Estime is going to see the field even less because, as you said, he did have that fumble in the preseason. He also had another fumble in the preseason that was called back because of a penalty, which was thankful for Denver. And so far this season, he's touched the ball, what, 9 times, I think, and has fumbled twice.
Yeah, that's
– it's yeah. very it's hard.
Another Melvin Gordon, man. At least Melvin Gordon scored touchdowns, you know?
Yeah, it's very hard to trust him. So
then at the end of the game – when you talked about Tyler Bidet. Sean Payton had brought it up in an interview – Tyler Bidet had approached him, and I guess he had a picture of himself when he was 12 years old. They were from New Orleans, and they had relocated after Katrina. Mm-hmm. But it was Sean Payton talked about how it made him feel old. It's like a little tiny Tyler Bidet at the game and stuff like that. But it was really cool to see Sean Payton go back and he's pretty he keeps his emotions to himself, but an emotional game for him, and really cool to see him come out with a win. And at the end of the game, we also saw a huge hug from Alvin Kamara. What do you see anything on that? Does Kamara make too much money for us to make any kind of move on him?
So Nick Kendall just did an article about, I believe it was Maurice Jones-Drew made a trade opinion that Denver should trade for Alvin Kamara. And Nick and I, as Nick was writing it, he was talking to me about the contract information, and I just don't see it plausible for the Saints to move on because Alvin Kamara, he has a per game check of $600,000. So for 7 games played, that's an additional $4.2 million that are going to count as dead money for him instead of savings. So now at dead money, you're looking at like $12 million of dead money on the Saints end, we're only saving like $6 million.
Wow.
I just don't see it plausible for them to trade him financially, because we talk about this and it's been the case for years. The Saints are in cap hell, and they have been, because all they keep doing to get out of it is just kicking the can down the road, restructure. And because they always, I mean, it started with Sean Payton, and we're kind of seeing it here in Denver. They always believe that they were just a couple pieces away so we can kick the can down the road, deal with it later. Well, the Saints still haven't dealt with it yet, and they're still kicking the can down the road. And moving Alvin Kamara just makes it even harder for them to get around to dealing with the dead cap hits.
Yeah, that's rough. I mean, it looked like a pretty dejected player out there. Is it, as somebody was saying, became saying, is it Kamara or Kamara? How do you?
I think it's Kamara, but I may be mistaken on that. I am terrible with names, as I always I say all the time. I'm terrible with names. I think it's Kamara. I think that's what the announcers were saying last night.
He looked pretty sad after a couple of plays. I know there was a couple. Maybe they tried to throw one, a leak went out to him, whatever, and he got hit right away. Mm-hmm. But he looked pretty upset, which, I mean, like anybody would. You couldn't even get a yard off of that. He was losing yards. But what do you think about our cornerbacks? So there's some pretty aggressive hitting from our cornerbacks and defensive backs. Riley Moss, Jaquan McMillan. They're just diving at the legs. It's taking people out from under their legs, but in a violent fashion without, like, being dirty about it. But It was really impressive to see that. And I know receivers have to – I would hate to have to deal with that.
Yeah, I mean, with the way the NFL is, you just have to be cautious about how you go about tackling. And, I mean, if you want to take somebody down, cut their legs out from underneath them.
Mm-hmm.
And the Broncos defensive backs are doing a pretty good job of doing that without, you know, crossing that line of being dirty about the hits. They're actually being pretty cautious and aren't, you know, targeting them for injuries. And I don't think that they've really caused any injuries to any receivers this year in that aspect. I mean, there was a big hit on Quentin Johnston against the Chargers game. And then where he just fell wrong. And I think he ended up hurting his shoulder. And then the rookie that they have, Ladd McConkey, he also got hurt, which was some ribs from when away he was tackled, but not leg injuries. But the Broncos corners, especially, they're not the biggest guys. They're not the most, you know, don't have the best build necessarily. Jaquan McMillan, he's on the smaller side. Riley Moss, he's got a decent build. Patrick Chain has a decent build. So it's cutting out those legs. That's a good way to also make sure you don't miss tackles too. And it's a good way of, even if they do, you know, do something to protect themselves, protect the legs to stay balanced, they're slowing down to do it, which is giving time for other people to come forward and help make sure the tackle gets made.
Yeah. When they're trying to jump over you, they're like, the momentum's completely stopping almost. Any thoughts on the young Clint Kubiak and how he's doing over there in New Orleans? I know he's their offensive coordinator. He kind of struggled last night. He started out pretty good, it seemed like, in the season. Not so much anymore.
It's hard to evaluate, you know, the offensive coordinator, Clint Kubiak, for the game last night, because they were without Derek Carr. All three of their starting interior offensive linemen to start the season were out. And then they lost two more of them during the game. Their two starting receivers were out. And one of their weapons, I guess, at tight end and Taysom Hill was also out. So injuries galore on the offense makes it really hard to really evaluate what he did. I think he called a pretty good game with the play calls to help put his quarterback in the best position. Mm-hmm. I just think that there was a lot of failing going on around it, just because of the talent level that they had due to the injuries that kept things from, you know, working out pretty well.
Yeah, it's still nice to see all these guys coming off of the Shanahan coaching tree and Gary Kubiak's son. And when he played at CSU, I think, having some success in the league. And hopefully he can get his quarterback back, because I think he is a talented play caller. He just needs some players, some players who know how to run his system effectively. So,
We have a couple comments here that I wanted to grab. Chase Wellner saying, I guess we know are no longer questioning the trade up for Riley Moss. And BK, I think most fans were mad at the Riley Moss pick. The trade up to get Riley Moss was and still is questionable. You traded a future third round pick and a fourth round pick to move up and spend a third round pick. You used two third round picks on him. Riley Moss is starting to make it worth it. I still think there's a little ways to go, though, before he fully makes it worth it. And starting to get... he's working his way there, I guess, is what I'm getting at with it. And then BK, Dennis Allen needs to go 100%. And I think the best thing you can do is looking at the last 10 seconds of the first half. You call a timeout only to take a kneel down.
Yeah, that was what everybody was like, what? Huh? Yeah, because, like, he thought he was going to go for a Hail Mary or like a Hail Mary or something. And he's like, first just run it out. And then he'll go, oh, maybe he'll do a Hail Mary. And then he still downed it.
I saw somebody say that he thought they were in field goal range on Twitter, either last night after the game or something like that. He was like asked about it, and I thought I saw, I might be mistaken on this, last night. Last night I just maybe misremembering it. I thought I saw somebody say that he thought that they were in field goal range, which no matter what way, no matter what reasoning he did, it just goes to show that he is doesn't have a clue with what he's really doing. Because in that situation, if you thought you were in, if you thought you were in field goal range, well, then are you even paying attention to the game and field positioning? Like,
yeah,
if it's that's like the case,
information from the tablet, not looking in front of him on the field.
Yeah. And if not, if it was just a, you know, oh, you thought about a Hail Mary or anything like that, it's like, dude, at least take a look at what your offense is doing and realize that, hey, that may not be the best chance. Like, the odds of a interception return for a touchdown were, would be slim in that situation, but still possible. And that was before the game really got fully out of hand for them. Like, just let the clock go down and all that. And then you had players on the field that were questioning what the heck they were doing. Spencer Radler was caught on camera, if you can read lips, saying, what the heck are we doing? It was just a questionable, weird decision from Dennis Allen. I don't think that's the only reason he should go, just to be clear. But it is definitely a thing of, like, it should be time to consider it.
That's rough when people are getting fired, but at least they get fired and they're still, like, millionaires, I guess.
Yeah. They still get, hey, every single cent of their contract for coaches, it's guaranteed. They get it no matter what.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, they do something illegal or anything like
that. Yeah, like a, I think like Gruden. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you watch Gruden's, his little show on YouTube, Breaking Down Quarterbacks? No. He looks like he's on drugs the entire time. But I don't think he is, but he's like so hyped up, whatever, you know, because he's Chucky. Yeah. And it's actually pretty entertaining to watch. But it's more like theatrical than anything.
Yeah.
He talked about the Denver Broncos offense and how slow we start. And he went in on about that the last game. But he really loves the Denver defense. So it's kind of cool. What else do we have here? And then, so with the trade deadline, we have what's his face up in Detroit. Detroit was killing it. They lost Aiden Hutchinson. Do you think they're going to go after our rival's best pass rusher to replace him? Since they've never been to a Super Bowl, they have to take advantage of any chance they have of going to a Super Bowl.
So it's funny because you're talking about Max Crosby, right? Just definitely. To make sure we're on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
Remember a couple weeks ago when we were live and prior to the Raiders game, and I talked about possibly them wanting to move on and trading Max Crosby. Yeah, I am still not entirely sure it happens this season, but I think there are a couple teams to keep an eye on when it comes to Crosby, especially now that he has been a little bit more vocal about possibly wanting out. Detroit Lions are definitely one of them. The other one would be the Atlanta Falcons, who are having such an issue getting after the quarterback that they need that kind of guy. So yeah, those two are also the two teams that I'd be calling about Baron Browning and trying to move him. But yeah, I'm not 100% sure we'll see a Max Crosby trade this year. I think at the latest we'll see him traded prior to next year's trade deadline.
Okay.
Hopefully it could be as early as a couple weeks.
Hopefully he gets traded out of the division. I'm tired of dealing with that dude. He seems like such a great guy. He's gone through some rough times in his life, and he's really rebounded, but he's a force on the field, and he's a guy you just don't want it on the other team. He's just too good.
Yeah, let him go be somebody else's problem.
Definitely.
Two games a year, that's more than enough. One game a year is more than enough with the type of player that he is. And it doesn't matter what you do against him. He just tends to cause havoc.
Yeah. Even when he's hurt. All right, then you got Chase Wellner coming in. What is the minimum you guys would accept for Browning?
A ham sandwich at this point.
Heritage Farm or Oscar?
So the ham sandwich is like a conditional 6th, 7th round pick 2 years from now. That's okay. The ham sandwich trade. But no, I'm kind of joking there. But my minimum would be like a 5th round pick, 6th round pick. because we've seen that this defense is this year is better without him than with him. And he has potential, but he has such an issue staying on the field. And we're getting to the point where that potential is no longer potential. It's like, he is what he is. Mm-hmm. He can't stay on the field. When he's on the field, he's inconsistent at getting after the quarterback, and he's not a great run defender. So yeah, I mean, I would consider a fifth or sixth round pick to move on from him, because again, he's also a free agent after this year, and you can take a gamble on the size of the contract he would get for a conditional pick in 2026, because conditional picks are always a year later. But I would rather take it now and move on from it and have that guaranteed pick, because 2026 is the year where you're going to really want to go in when you're fully out of the Russell Wilson contract, go in with big signings, go in with moving, you know, draft picks around. And this year you're going to want to use, you know, those draft picks for cheaper guys, for depth to grow and develop, to help make an impact. So I'd rather, you know, that fifth or sixth this year instead of most likely a fourth or fifth in 2026. If he gets a contract that's big enough, of course.
That's so sad too. We had such high hopes for the guy. But it's just not working out. Hopefully he can give us a couple more good games so we can get some better trade value and we can get an exciting, I don't know, couple sacks out of him. But I hope he doesn't leave, but it's his contract year and he's always hurt. So it's really hard to put any kind of financial stake into a person like that. Mm-hmm. Then we have somebody else is by Alaska.
Yeah, Malcolm, are you in Talabang permanently in the Philippines? Or are you still over there? Because it was always nice seeing you, you know, coming in from Homer in just a little bit south of where I'm at. Yeah, just wondering. Wow. Hope you're doing well. And again, congratulations on everything that's going on in the personal life.
So what are you looking forward to coming into this next week? What are some things that the Broncos need to build on and some stuff that they need to fix that can really hurt them down the line, especially against a team that's not as good as them, and if they can fall behind early, like what do they do to stay out of that position?
Hopefully what they can build on is the running game. And continue to use that to take pressure off the passing game and Bo Nix, and continue using Bo Nix as a runner. Continue using that athleticism and the running ability and rushing ability and even RPOs. Mm-hmm. The Broncos had good success using run pass options or even option runs against the Saints last night. Continue using that and building off that. Will you then build up the passing offense starting with the footwork? Because Bo Nix has not been a good passer. No matter the split that I look at, whether it be, you know, quick passes, short passes, first against the blitz, not a blitz, first pressure, not pressured, no matter where he's targeting, whether it's a wide target, tight target, slot target, out of the backfield, he is bottom seven in EPA per dropback. Hmm. It doesn't matter. Bottom seven in EPA per dropback. And I know a lot of people want to sit there and turn to drops as a defense for him, but his adjusted EPA, which accounts for drops, it takes it out of it. He still has the fifth worst adjusted completion percentage.
You know, also added a drop of Bo Nix's pass. Tyrann Mathieu.
Yeah. And so it's a dropped interception. I mean, this Bo Nix is 25 of 73 on passes that travel 10 air yards. So these are passes that he is throwing 10 yards down or more down the field, at least 10 air yards traveled. 25 of 73. You cannot have a sustained passing offense with numbers like that.
I didn't even know he threw 73 times down the field.
Yeah. 73 total of 10 plus on, I think, a total of 224 attempts, I think is what it is. I'm not entirely sure on that. I have to pull his numbers back up on that. But against the Saints,
see the guys like Vele and they'll have like seven catches and they have like 39 yards.
Yeah, because it's catch and runs. Mm-hmm. Like they're doing a pretty good job on these shorter throws of getting them with some decent space to make a play after the catch. But if the coverage is tight, the receivers aren't able, you know, to break away and make a play that way. But you just got to have more sustained success throwing 10 plus yards down the field. And you want to be looking at least a 50% completion percentage. And we're just not getting that from Bo Nix. And then you add in, I mean, hey, it's great. He's had 4 touchdowns in on these plays of 10 plus air yards traveled, but he also has 5 interceptions. All of his interceptions have been on these plays, on these types of passes.
Mm-hmm.
So you just got to figure that out. You got to sit there and work around it. Find a way to have sustained success in the passing game with Bo Nix. It's starting with his footwork and improving that and correcting it. And while you do that, build upon the run game and keep using the run game. I mean, even in previous games where Sean Payton has ridiculed the run game, they were having some success until he decides to go away from it into a heavy passing offense. He's got to, you know, stick with it. Even when things start to struggle a little bit, you got to stick with the run game because you can't put that kind of pressure to be a passing only offense for a while, for over a quarter, on Bo Nix, because it leads to some issues. And it's not, again, it's not all Bo Nix's fault, but you can't talk about issues in the passing game without, you know, talking about Bo Nix. Part of it is him, and it's not all him though. So that is where you want to start for that. Build off the running game while you work on improving the passing game, starting with Bo Nix's footwork.
Definitely. So the running game, like, you're definitely for the run game. That's going to open. That's where I noticed, like, earlier in the games, like the Seattle game and stuff like that, and the Pittsburgh game, is those windows when he was getting incomplete passes were some really tight windows. And if you can get that running game going, you're going to open those windows up and a little less pressure on those throws. Maybe be able to catch those and catch them on their run, or have the time, the space to turn around and turn upfield. But right now, yeah, without the running game, they're just not getting enough separation from these cornerbacks and these defensive backs. But I don't know. We say we had little Jordan Humphrey. He's starting to come along. Bailey's back. Troy Franklin's getting some targets. Definitely Franklin can be one of those guys who can catch and move. Bailey seems like more of a possession 50-50 guy. But,
and if you want to talk about separation, I mean, it's worth noting that the Broncos are 13th in average separation by their receivers, tight ends, and running backs.
Are they?
At really? At 3.7 yards. The two highest are the Ravens and the Chiefs at 4.4 yards. But the third team, the Detroit Lions, they're at 3.9, so 0.2 yards more. Whereas the worst team in the NFL is at 2.8 in the 49ers, 2.9 for the Cowboys, and then 3.1 for the Chargers. So they're right around the middle of the pack, really, in average separation. But with that, I will add the caveat that a lot of this is also, you know, those quick swing passes out behind the backfield, those open running backs in the middle of the field, that inflates the average separation quite a bit. And the receivers are not matching that. I think that there's only one receiver that has over 3 yards of average separation.
Is that Tyreek Hill or something?
For the Broncos specifically.
Oh, for the Broncos. Okay.
I think the only one that is over 3 yards of separation at the receiver position is Josh Reynolds. I can pull it up and double check real quick too. Just because I know that they're not doing as well. Yeah. Oh, sorry. I guess so. Cortland Sutton and Josh Reynolds are at 2.3 and 3.5, or 2.5. Lil Jordan Humphrey is 3.3. Troy Franklin is 3.6, and Devon Bailey is 3.4. Last time I looked at these was prior to the Chargers game, I think, and I think that Franklin and Bailey weren't qualifying at that time.
Okay.
So I didn't know their numbers, but
so it says Daniel Yost comes in and he says Kenneth and Eric, what do you think? Who do you think we should add to our running back room and why? Is there anybody out there that you would like to kick the tires on, or
just roll with
our guys?
I mean, it would always be good to add, especially when you have such an inconsistent running game as the Broncos. I just don't know who's out there that you could realistically look at to add. I haven't done a lot of looking around when it comes to the running back position. And checking that out, it's been tight end and wide receivers where I think the Broncos need more help. And if you should trade for somebody, it should be from there. So for running backs, I can't really think of anybody.
Yeah, the only other running back I was kind of thinking about it already got snatched up a couple weeks ago, and that was Kareem Hunt. But he's got a lot of baggage with him, so
yeah,
I don't know if he should go that way either. But yeah, so hopefully we don't look ahead of the Carolina coming up next week, because we also know who's coming up the following week after that. That's probably going to be one of our bigger games of the season with Baltimore. And that's when we'll see what this team is really made of, I guess. I don't know. At the same time, Baltimore's they're iffy too. So,
and I mean, I talked about it, mentioned it earlier about a couple weeks ago. I mentioned about how I break up the season into quarters, and you know, needing to go 4-1 and or 3-1 in these four games, finishing up with the win against Carolina Panthers. We do that, and a big reason for that is because those next four games. At Baltimore, at Kansas City, and then a home game, and then a road game. 3 of 4 on the road, 2 of 3 divisional games, I believe, or 2 of 4 divisional games. So it's probably their toughest part of the schedule, which is why it's so critical. Because if you can go, if you can win, beat the Carolina Panthers, you can go into those four games with a 5-3 record. You can sit there and be able to afford some losses here, because the one game that is at home, they're on the road against Las Vegas. So two of four on the road are divisional games, or 2 of 3 on the road are divisional games. And their one home game is against the Atlanta Falcons, who have a really good offense that by this point will probably have added to their pass rush ability on defense to help their defense out. And then you get into a back five games where it's a little bit easier. You have 3 home games to 2 road games. The road games come against Los Angeles and Cincinnati. You're at home against Kansas City. You're at home against Indianapolis. You're at home against Cleveland. So you have 3 underperforming teams. You have a Kansas City Chiefs team who, at this point, may be resting starters. And then a Los Angeles Chargers team, which we don't know where they'll be then, because they're almost as inconsistent week to week as the Broncos are. So they need to beat the Panthers, get themselves to 5-3 so they can handle the next four games or the four games after that, and then put themselves in a good position to possibly make a push for the playoffs.
That would be awesome. Yeah. It's been too long. There's a couple of suggestions for the running back. We got ATN from Jacksonville. I know they're kind of falling apart. They were on the rise, and then I don't know what the heck happened to them.
Did you hear what their coach, whose name escapes me at the moment,
Doug Peterson?
Did you hear what he said about I think it was point differential or something like that? He basically pulled the Pat Shurmur comment of stats are for losers.
Yeah.
Like, man.
Is he practicing incomplete passes too?
Probably.
Oh my god,
it's rough. But Travis Etienne, he wouldn't be a bad get. I mean,
he's a pass catching dude too.
Yeah, I just wonder what it would take to get him, and I also wonder about the finances on Jacksonville's end, because he has a base salary this year of 2.4, which that's minuscule on it. But he has a dead cap of 2.4 compared to 1.6 saved. Sorry, he has 1.6 dead compared to 2.4 saved. But that number changes once you calculate game checks, which is you take 2.4 divided by 17 and divvy it up from there.
You don't know that off the top of your head?
No. Off the top of my head, I do not. It just makes things a little bit more complicated.
What about anybody from Atlanta not named Bijan Robinson, like a Tyler Algier?
Algier, he is one that I would look at. Although I think if Denver traded for Tyler Algier, Scott may rage quit. Like, I really do. I think Scott would rage quit. and Nick as well, because Nick has been a huge fan of Algier for a while.
Yeah, well, then they can root for him on the Broncos. Come on. Or what did our last year's guy that they had? He's in Pittsburgh now. Cordarrelle Patterson.
Cordarrelle Patterson.
I liked him too. He's a little older, longer in the tooth, but he still has speed. He's still productive, or he can be productive.
Yeah. So there's definitely some guys out there, and I see a chat talking about it. It's like, I'm not saying Atlanta's unbeatable. I'm saying it's a difficult game.
Okay.
Just a difficult game.
What else we have? What are your thoughts on the field goals? That was a lot of field goals yesterday.
Yeah, you got to figure it out how to finish in the end zone. Like, it's great they scored 33 points. It's great they scored 26 points on offense. But when you face teams in the playoffs, when you face teams that are pushing for the playoffs, it's hard to win games with just field goals. Maybe the Broncos can, do that because of the quality of their defense.
Mm-hmm.
But if their defense breaks, it's no longer good enough. They got to turn some of those into touchdowns, because that game, honestly, it should have been 50-something to 10.
Yeah.
But they just got to finish in the end zone.
Yeah. And then they only got that touchdown when, like, real late when they brought in the new quarterback. I forgot who that kid's name was.
Jake Haener. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, see, we're coming to this end of this show. Did you have anything else you wanted to kind of talk about?
Not really. I do have a question here. Can we win with Kroll as our main option tight end? Hey, they did last night. I don't think it's sustainable, but they did last night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's serviceable. He definitely can, once he catches it, can get some yak on those catches. He's enthused. He wants to be there, but yeah. I don't know. We got to find a – I don't know. He also has been in situations where the ball comes up short, so it wasn't really his fault a couple of times.
Yeah. Do you want me to run through the end of show stuff?
Sure, why not?
All right. So thank you guys for watching. We're going to end up getting out of here. We're right about that hour mark here. But before we do, remember that you can always subscribe, like, and share. This helps us out so much, especially with the YouTube algorithm. Helps us get to the eyes of more people. Make sure you go to Spotify or Apple or wherever and leave a 5-star review for our show, for all the shows combined, if you want. You get a chance to win some swag each month, as Chad likes to refer to it as swag. I got to change this around to saying merch for me. It feels weird saying swag. Make sure you check us out on Instagram at MileHighHuddle with an underscore between mile and high and high and huddle. Go to mhhmerch.com to get your merch on. You guys can get a lot of cool stuff there. You guys can get some shirts, some hats like the one that I have here on my head. They have coffee mugs, all sorts of stuff, all sorts of different gear there as well. I think there's also some posters. Go to facebook.com/milehighhuddlepod as well as milehighhuddle. Give a follow there, subscribe there, and you guys can get access to all of our written content, as well as all the videos, all the YouTube videos, which the videos that Lance Sanderson and I have been doing will likely make a comeback this next week, being sick and then a short week. Kind of took those off the planning for us for now.
I like
that. We should be back this next Monday. Go to twitter.com/milehighhuddle or at milehighhuddle. That is where you can get access, again, to all of our written content. You guys can get access to all of the shows, everything that we do and everything we put out. And while you're there on Twitter, checking out at Mile Huddle, you can follow me at Eric Trickle and at Kenneth or at Kenneth underscore MHH to follow us on Twitter as well. You can also follow at the MHH pod, at DVDD underscore pod for the Dove Valley Deep Divers pod. We thank you guys for tuning in. We thank you guys for joining us. But before we get out of here, we want to say thank you to all the people who have come in with stars and super chats. And if we missed any stars, I apologize for that. I don't have access to see the stars on here, and we don't have Scott with us to highlight them for us. But Michael Ronquillo, we know you come in every night with some of those, so we appreciate you. Casey Nickel, we got BK, we got Eric Flynn, all jumping in and joining us with some super chats and stars. We appreciate you guys. We appreciate all of your guys' support, both financially and just being in the chat, liking, subscribing, all of that. Can't tell you how much that helps out with the algorithm and stuff like that. But before we get out of here, Kenneth, any final words? What's going on in Denver this weekend?
I didn't even look up this stuff. I know it's Halloween coming up pretty soon, so there's always going to be like some haunted houses. some of those. I'd like to do the haunted pub crawls. Have you ever done one of those?
I haven't. I'm not even sure what that is.
So you just kind of go from, though, like you'll start out at a bar, you have a drink, and then you'll go to a haunted place, like, and they'll give you the tour, and then you go to another bar, and then you'll go to another haunted place. We did one in San Antonio a couple years ago by the Alamo during the Day of the Dead. It's really cool. We stayed on the Riverwalk. It was pretty cheap too. So we had a great time, and it was kind of creepy. I don't really believe in stuff like that, but they took us to a place called, I forgot what it was called, but they, the seventh floor used to be the psychiatric ward, and this place is a hotel now. Mm. And that was the only place I felt like uneasy. Like, I didn't want to be there no more. I was like, I want to leave. But yeah, so I'll probably be doing some haunted stuff, whatever, hanging out with the kiddo, going to the arcade. We've got a Japanese arcade in there.
Oh, that sounds cool. And,
yeah, she loves it. It's our favorite place to go. But yeah, everybody have a great weekend. And dress up for, yeah, you guys should, we have to see some people's Halloween costumes too. So if you want to, you can post them, you can tag me on X or Twitter with your Halloween, and maybe we'll talk to Chad about a little contest or something.
Are you dressing up for Halloween this year?
I want to. I don't really dress up anymore, but I want to be the bird from Dumb and Dumber, the one the one where they chop its head off, whatever.
Yeah.
Pretty bird. I just thought it would be kind of silly and be fun to do. So yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'll do that. But yeah, if you guys want to tag me in any of your guys' Halloween costume or your kids' like Bronco theme ones, that'd be awesome. But yeah, that's all I got going on this weekend. And what about yourself?
My brother's birthday's coming up. That's awesome. Tuesday. So Tuesday night's game night in our household. My parents come over, my brother, his kids come over.
That's cool.
Normally we do D&D, but lately we've been doing game nights as one of my nephews has marching band. But yeah, we have that. And yeah, I mean, talking about dressing up with a 7-year-old, we do family costumes, and this year we're all astronauts.
Oh, okay.
I'm really jealous of the little one because she has this really cool helmet that lights up and everything, and we'll talk and like be like mission control.
Yeah.
So maybe next week I'll join the podcast since it's right before Halloween, and we'll do that. I won't be here the day after Halloween, November 1st. So people who've been watching here know how crazy I get about the holidays. And the agreement that I have is I can't put up any Christmas decorations or do anything like that until after Halloween. So it's become November 1st every year. Up goes the Christmas tree, up goes the lights. Up goes all the decorating for that. So having family coming over, my wife got the day off from work, so we're going to spend the day together doing that instead of me just doing it by myself. So I won't be here November 1st. I'll be here next week, though, and maybe I'll dress up in my orange astronaut costume that I have for it.
For a game recommendation, there's this one. It's like the werewolf game. Have you heard that one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where it's like two werewolves and the rest are villagers.
Yeah. I have that one. I have one that's like that, but it's with vampires. Mm-hmm. I have a couple versions of it. I have one that's cards. I have one that's like little like tokens. I have one on our phone. But we also have another game that I just got recently that's called Deception, and it's kind of the same thing. You have cards in front of you, and it's all somebody committed a murder, and you have to figure out who it was, with what weapon, or with what was the means, and what is a key piece of evidence. With the person who's running it as the lab forensic, and you give clues and stuff like that. Okay. So it's a lot like Werewolf, but it's a lot of fun. We've been enjoying it.
All right. Well, sorry for that going on forever on that, guys, but hopefully you guys all have a great weekend and
stay safe. Don't drink and drive.
Since you don't have to do anything Sunday now, you can watch everybody else play, I guess. Do a family day.
Watch the Panthers game. See what we're ready for. Not a whole
lot.
Not
afraid of the Panthers. Do they air it anywhere? They probably don't even air it in North Carolina.
Probably not.
Anyway, I'll let you close it out.
But yeah, anyways, hope you guys have a great weekend. Don't drink and drive. Stay safe. As always, go Broncos. We get 10 days off after a win. It's always nice. Celebrate that. Have a good one.
You are listening to Dove Valley Deep Divers with Eric Trickle
and Lance Sanderson.
New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.